Chapter 16. In the whole of this method of fighting, since the engagement took place under the eyes of all and before the camp, it was perceived that our men, on account of the weight of their arms, inasmuch as they could neither pursue the enemy when retreating, nor dare quit their standards, were little suited to this kind of enemy. That the horse also fought with great danger, because they, the Britons, generally retreated even designedly, and, when they had drawn off our men a short distance from the legions, leaped from their chariots and fought on foot in unequal and to them advantageous battle. But the system of cavalry engagement is wont to produce equal danger, and indeed the same, both to those who retreat and those who pursue. To this was added that they never fought in close order, but in small parties and at great distances, and had detachments placed in different parts, and then the one relieved the other, and the vigorous and fresh succeeded the wearied. Chapter 17. The following day the enemy halted at the hills, a distance from our camp, and presented themselves in small parties, and began to challenge our horse to battle with less spirit than the day before. But at noon, when Kaiser had sent three legions and all the cavalry with Q. Trebonius, the lieutenant, for the purpose of foraging, they flew upon the foragers suddenly from all quarters, so that they did not keep off even from the standards in the legions. Our men made an attack on them vigorously, repulsed them, nor did they cease to pursue them until the horse, relying on relief as they saw the legions behind them, drove the enemy precipitately before them, and, slaying a great number of them, did not give them the opportunity either of rallying or halting, or leaping from their chariots. Immediately after this retreat, the auxiliaries who had assembled from all sides departed, nor after that time did the enemy ever engage with us in very large numbers. Chapter 18. Kaiser, discovering their design, leads his army into the territories of Cassivellaunus to the river Thames, which river can be forded in one place only, and that with difficulty. When he had arrived there, he perceives that numerous forces of the enemy were marshaled on the other bank of the river. The bank also was defended by sharp stakes fixed in front, and stakes of the same kind fixed under the water were covered by the river. These things being discovered by some prisoners and deserters, Kaiser, sending forward the cavalry, ordered the legions to follow them immediately. But the soldiers advanced with such speed and such ardor, though they stood above the water by their heads only, that the enemy could not sustain the attack of the legions and of the horse, and quitted the banks, and committed themselves to flight. Chapter 19. Cassivellaunus, as we have stated above, all hope rising out of battle being laid aside, the greater part of his forces being dismissed, and about 4,000 charioteers only being left, used to observe our marches and retire a little from the road, and conceal himself in intricate and woody places. And in those neighborhoods in which he had discovered we were about to march, he used to drive the cattle and the inhabitants from the fields into the woods. And when our cavalry, for the sake of plundering and ravaging the more freely, scattered themselves among the fields, he used to send out charioteers from the woods by all the well-known roads and paths, and, to the great danger of our horse, engage with them. And this source of fear hindered them from straggling very extensively. The result was that Kaiser did not allow excursions to be made to a great distance from the main body of the legions, and ordered that the damage should be done to the enemy in ravaging their lands and kindling fires only so far as the legionary soldiers could, by their own exertion and marching, accomplish it. Chapter 20. In the meantime, the Trinobantes, almost the most powerful state of those parts, from which the young man Mandubratius, embracing the protection of Kaiser, had come to the continent of Gaul to meet him, whose father, Immanuentius, had possessed the sovereignty in the state, and had been killed by Cassivellaunus. He himself had escaped death by flight. Send ambassadors to Kaiser, and promise that they will surrender themselves to him and perform his commands. They entreat him to protect Mandubratius from the violence of Cassivellaunus, and to send to their state someone to preside over it, and possess the government. Kaiser demands 40 hostages from them, and corn for his army, and sends Mandubratius to them. They speedily performed the things demanded, and sent hostages to the number appointed, and the corn. Chapter 21. The Trinobantes being protected and secured from any violence of the soldiers, the Canimagni, the Segantiaci, the Ancalites, the Vibroci, and the Cassii, sending embassies, surrender themselves to Caesar. From them he learns that the capital town of Cassivellaunus was not far from that place, and was defended by woods and morasses, and a very large number of men and of cattle had been collected in it. Now the Britons, when they have fortified the intricate woods in which they are wont to assemble for the purpose of avoiding the incursion of an enemy, with the entrenchment and a rampart, call them a town. Thither he proceeds with his legions. He finds the place admirably fortified by nature and art. He, however, undertakes to attack it in two directions. The enemy, having remained only a short time, did not sustain the attack of our soldiers, and hurried away on the other side of the town. A great amount of cattle was found there, and many of the enemy were taken and slain in their flight. Chapter 22. While these things are going forward in those places, Cassivellaunus sends messengers into Kent, which we have observed above is on the sea, over which districts four several kings reigned, King Getarix, Carvilius, Taximagulus, and Segonax, and commands them to collect all their forces and unexpectedly assail and storm the naval camp. When they had gone to the camp, our men, after making a sally, slaying many of their men, and also capturing a distinguished leader named Lugotorix, brought back their own men in safety. Cassivellaunus, when this battle was reported to him, as so many losses had been sustained and his territories laid waste, being alarmed most of all by the desertion of the states, sends ambassadors to Caesar to treat about a surrender through the mediation of Commius the Atrebatian. Caesar, since he had determined to pass the winter on the continent, on account of the sudden revolts of Gaul, and as much of the summer did not remain, and he perceived that even that could be easily protracted, demands hostages, and prescribes what tribute Britain should pay each year to the Roman people. He forbids and commands Cassivellaunus that he wage not war against Mandubratius or the Trinobantes. Chapter 23. When he had received the hostages, he leads back the army to the sea, and finds the ships repaired. After launching these, because he had a large number of prisoners, and some of the ships had been lost in the storm, he determines to convey back his army at two embarkations. And so it happened that out of so large a number of ships, in so many voyages, neither in this nor in the previous year was any ship missing which conveyed soldiers. But very few of those were sent back to him from the continent empty, as the soldiers of the former convoy has been disembarked, and out of those 60 in number which Labienus had taken care to have built, reached their destination, almost all the rest were driven back. And when Caesar had waited for them for some time in vain, lest he should be debarred from a voyage by the season of the year, inasmuch as the equinox was at hand, he of necessity stowed his soldiers the more closely, and a very great calm coming on, after he had weighed anchor at the beginning of the second watch, he reached land at break of day and brought in all the ships in safety. Chapter 24. The ships having been drawn up and a general assembly of the Gauls held at Samarobriva, because the corn that year had not prospered in Gaul by reason of the droughts, he was compelled to station his army in its winter quarters, differently from the former years, and to distribute the legions among several states. One of them he gave to C. Fabius, his lieutenant, to be marched into the territories of the Marini, a second to Q. Cicero, into those of the Nervi, a third to L. Rassius, into those of the Isui, a fourth he ordered to winter with T. Labienus among the Remi in the confines of the Treveri. He stationed three in Belgium. Over these he appointed M. Crassus, his quaestor, and L. Munatius Plancus, and C. Trebonius, his lieutenants. One legion which he had raised last on the other side of the Po, and five cohorts, he sent amongst the Eburones, the greatest portion of whom lie between the Meuse and the Rhine, and who were under the government of Ambiorix and Cativolcus. He ordered Q. Titurius Sabinus and L. Aranculius Cotta, his lieutenants, to take the command of these soldiers. The legions being distributed in this manner, he thought he could most easily remedy the scarcity of corn, and yet the winter quarters of all these legions, except that which he had given to L. Rassius to be led into the most peaceful and tranquil neighborhood, were comprehended within about 100 miles. He himself, in the meanwhile, until he had stationed the legions and knew that the several winter quarters were fortified, determined to stay in Gaul. Chapter 25. There was among the Carnutes a man named Tasgetius, born of very high rank, whose ancestors had held the sovereignty in his state. To him, Caesar had restored the position of his ancestors, in consideration of his prowess and attachment towards him, because in all his wars he had availed himself of his valuable services. His personal enemies had killed him when in the third year of his reign, many even of his own state being openly promoters of that act. This event is related to Caesar. He, fearing because several were involved in the act that the state might revolt at their instigation, orders Lucius Plancus, with a legion, to proceed quickly from Belgium to the Carnutes and winter there, and arrest and send to him the persons by whose instrumentality he should discover that Tasgetius was slain. In the meantime, he was apprised by all the lieutenants and questors to whom he had assigned the legions that they had arrived in winter quarters, and that the place for the quarters was fortified. Chapter 26. About 15 days after they had come into winter quarters, the beginning of a sudden insurrection and revolt arose from Ambiorix and Cativolcus, who, though they had met with Sabinus and Cotta at the borders of their kingdom, and had conveyed corn into our winter quarters, induced by the messages of Indutio Marus, one of the Treviri, excited their people, and after having suddenly assailed the soldiers, engaged in procuring wood, came with a large body to attack the camp. When our men had speedily taken up arms and had ascended the rampart, and sending out some Spanish horse on one side had proved conquerors in the cavalry action, the enemy, despairing of success, drew off their troops from the assault. Then they shouted according to their custom that some of our men should go forward to a conference, alleging that they had some things which they desired to say respecting the common interest, by which they trusted their disputes could be removed. Chapter 27. C. Arpinaeus, a Roman knight, the intimate friend of Q. Titurius, and with him Q. Junius, a certain person from Spain, who already on previous occasions had been accustomed to go to Ambiorix at Caesar's mission, is sent to them for the purpose of a conference. Before them, Ambiorix spoke to this effect, that he confessed that for Caesar's kindness towards him he was very much indebted to him, inasmuch as by his aid he had been freed from a tribute which he had been accustomed to pay to the Aduatuci, his neighbors, and because his own son and the son of his brother had been sent back to him, whom, when sent in the number of hostages, the Aduatuci had detained among them in slavery and in chains, and that he had not done that which he had done in regard to the attacking of the camp, either by his own judgment or desire, but by the compulsion of his state, and that his government was of that nature, that the people had as much of authority over him as he over the people. To the state, moreover, the occasion of the war was this, that it could not withstand the sudden combination of the Gauls, that he could easily prove this from his own weakness, since he was not so little versed in affairs as to presume that with his forces he could conquer the Roman people, but that it was the common resolution of Gaul that day was appointed for the storming of all Caesar's winter quarters, in order that no legion should be able to come to the relief of another legion, that Gauls could not easily deny Gauls, especially when a measure seemed entered into for recovering their common freedom. Since he had performed his duty to them on the score of patriotism, he said, he has now regard to gratitude for the kindness of Caesar, that he warned, that he prayed Titurius by the claims of hospitality to consult for his and his soldiers' safety, that a large force of the Germans had been hired and had passed the Rhine, that it would arrive in 2 days, that it was for them to consider whether they thought fit, before the nearest people perceived it, to lead off their soldiers when drawn out of winter quarters, either to Cicero or to Labienus, one of whom was about 50 miles distant from them, the other rather more, that this he promised and confirmed by oath that he would give them a safe passage through his territories, and when he did that, he was both consulting for his own state, because it would be relieved from the winter quarters, and also making a requital to Caesar for his obligations. Chapter 28. Arpinaeus and Junius relate to the lieutenants what they had heard. They, greatly alarmed by the unexpected affair, though these things were spoken by an enemy, still thought they were not to be disregarded, and they were especially influenced by this consideration, that it was scarcely credible that the obscure and humble state of the Eburones had dared to make war upon the Roman people of their own accord. Accordingly, they refer the matter to a council, and a great controversy arises before them. L. Aranculius and several tribunes of the soldiers of the centurions of the first rank were of opinion that nothing should be done hastily, and that they should not depart from the camp without Caesar's orders. They declared that any forces of the Germans, however great, might be encountered by fortified winter quarters, that this fact was a proof of it, that they had sustained the first assault of the Germans most valiantly, inflicting many wounds upon them, that they were not distressed for corn, that in the meantime relief would come both from the nearest winter quarters and from Caesar. Lastly, they put the query, what could be more undetermined, more undignified, than to adopt measures respecting the most important affairs on the authority of an enemy? Chapter 29. In opposition to those things, Titurius exclaimed that they would do this too late, when greater forces of the enemy, after a junction with the Germans, should have assembled, or when some disaster had been received in the neighboring winter quarters, that the opportunity for deliberating was short, that he believed that Caesar had set forth into Italy, as the Carnutes would not otherwise have taken the measure of slaying Tasgetius, nor would the Eburones, if he had been present, have come to the camp with so great defiance of us. That he did not regard the enemy, but the fact as the authority that the Rhine was near, that the death of Ariovistus and our previous victories were subjects of great indignation to the Germans, that Gaul was inflamed, that after having received so many defeats, she was reduced under the sway of the Roman people, her pristine glory in military matters being extinguished. Lastly, who would persuade himself of this? That Ambiorix had resorted to a design of that nature without sure grounds, that his own opinion was safe on either side, if there be nothing very formidable, they would go without danger to the nearest legion. If all Gaul conspired with the Germans, their only safety lay in dispatch. What issue would the advance of Cotta and of those who differed from him have? From which, if immediate danger was not to be dreaded, yet certainly famine by a protracted siege was. Chapter 30. The discussion having been held on the two sides, when opposition was offered strenuously by Cotta and the principal officers, "Prevail," said Sabinus, "if you so wish it." And he said it with a louder voice, that a great portion of the soldiers might hear it. "Nor am I the person among you," he said, "who is most powerfully alarmed by the danger of death. These will be aware of it, and then, if anything disastrous shall have occurred, they will demand a reckoning at your hands. These, who, if it were permitted by you, united 3 days hence with the nearest winter quarters, may encounter the common condition of war with the rest, and not, as if forced away and separated far from the rest, perish either by the sword or by famine.